Welcome to Wildlife Outdoors with your host, Russell and Jose. If you have a passion for conservation of the outdoors, or you're enjoying a calming hike in the mountains, an exhilarating kayak trip on the river, feeling a fish on the end of your line, cooking on an open flame in a primitive campsite, or stalking big game, just waiting for the perfect shot, you're in the right place. So put on your boots and polarized sunglasses and come along for the ride.
All righty, y'all. Well, welcome back to Wildlife Outdoors. This is going to be episode 8, and we have a special guest with us today. We have a mutual friend of mine and Jose's. His name is Marco. You want to say hello, Marco?
Hey, everybody.
So he's going to join us today. The original plan was Jose wasn't going to be able to make it this week, so we reached out to Marco and see if he could fill in, and then Jose was actually able to make it. So now you got all three of us. Lucky y'all.
Surprise, surprise.
So I guess you can give a little description of yourself, Marco, and tell us what you're all about.
So I live in the Central Texas area, Butte, Kyle, Hayes area. Been fishing not as long as I'd like, but been able to meet some of my best friends doing it. Spending time in the outdoors has been a big stress reliever. I wish I would have found it earlier. I mean, of course, I'm only 34, but I want to say I started fishing when I was 21. Didn't have an idea on what to do. Used to fish with a little bit of bait every once in a while, and slowly, you know, worked my way into fly fishing and never looked back. I almost don't even conventional fish anymore. Not because I think it's, you know, a more superior way of fishing, but I seem to enjoy the fly fishing a lot more. It's a lot more challenging, and I think it's it helps me. At least I feel it helps me challenge myself and get better at it, and kind of in a way helps me with life as well. Whenever I feel stressed out, I just think about a time that I caught a fish on the fly rod. I'm like, okay, maybe it's not a big deal, you know? So, yeah, I get out as much as possible when I can. I do work crazy schedule now, but yeah, that's about it. Don't do much hunting or anything like that, so I wouldn't be able to offer any kind of information on any of that stuff, but I don't think we're going to talk about that today anyways, right? So
probably not. No. Yeah. But yeah, I feel pretty much the same way about fly fishing. I don't think it's superior in any way. It's just kind of more of my preference. It's more challenging, therefore it's more rewarding.
Definitely. Definitely. So I agree.
It's all right, guys. I can just say we're better.
Come on. I was trying to hold back from that.
we'll just go ahead and run with it.
I'm just kidding.
Awesome. You had mentioned that you said it's a stress reliever and stuff like that. So I definitely feel the same way, and I know Jose does too. I mean, with him being a PhD student and me being an engineer of trades, I mean, stress is just an everyday thing. And it's nice to get out on the water and kind of decompress. But it's funny that you talk about that, because I literally went and watched a movie yesterday that has to do with stress and PTSD and fly fishing, which is awesome. It's a movie called Mending the Line. I know that Honey Hole had recently talked about it. They had, I believe, the director on the show with them and did an interview. And so I was excited to see the movie prior to listening to their episode. And then I listened to it and I was even more excited. And so I went and saw it yesterday. And it is an amazing movie. I mean, my girlfriend went with me. She doesn't care for fishing at all, and she loved it. I mean, the storyline of it is really good. It's really well put together movie. But basically, it is a Afghanistan veteran that goes to the VA for psychological help, and they recommend him to try fly fishing. The doctor does. And she used to work with this other veteran who's a little bit older. And there's a lot of, you know, it goes over some of the back storylines of the characters. I'm not going to get into that, but basically he finds a way to cope with his PTSD. And then also he ends up not being able to go back to active duty like he thought he was going to be able to. And fly fishing was able to help him, you know, get over the depression of that. And I mean, it's just a really well put together movie. So if y'all get a chance to see it, I definitely recommend seeing it.
I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
I listened to the podcast that Honey Hole put out, and it was really interesting. I found like just all the like back end stuff that no one would really think about, I guess, to be really fascinating. And I really want to check it out, dude. It's hard because I know we talked a little bit about it before we started the podcast, but Where I live currently, there's not a theater showing it. So I'm going to have to try and find somewhere that does, or request, see if we can request a theater in our, in the town I live in to show it. And there's two fly fishing organizations in that, in where I live. So I think it'd be really neat to kind of have an organization, or have a little thing put together, and maybe like have a club out and go check it out. I think it'd be awesome, especially because, Good Fly is, I think it was founded in College Station, and I believe they use, I think I could be wrong, and I apologize if I butcher it, but I think Good Fly's mission, or mission statement rather, is to use fly fishing as a way to cope with stress and anxiety and stuff like that, especially for like first responders and military, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So I think it'd be really neat to have those guys out and to go check it out. So I have to talk with them and see what we can put together.
Yeah, dude, that would be awesome. And I'm pretty sure if y'all can get enough people petitioned, I know that, I believe it's on the Facebook webpage of the Mending the Line movie, that they actually have a place to request. So if anybody out there, any of the listeners want to see the movie, but it's not being shown near them, I believe if you go to the Facebook page for Mending the Line, they have instructions on how to request it to be showed at a local theater. So that's something that you could do if you can get a few people to fill it out. You know, maybe you can have a local theater actually air it, which you know, is pretty cool. Cause I mean, it's a great movie. I wouldn't say it's a lower budget, but it's a privately funded movie. So right. It's not like a large budget movie with all these, you know, hotshot actors. There are some really good actors in it. Some well-known actors at that. But it's just really well put together. And then if you listen to the Honey Hole podcast where they talk about it, like Jose was saying, all the stuff on the back end of it and how they cared for the fish and how they got certain shots and who they reached out to for certain footages and stuff like that. It's a great listen. You should go check out that podcast too, but it's just,
yeah, dude, for sure.
It's interesting to think about all of that stuff.
I will say this. You know, I know you mentioned that like it was like privately funded. Am I saying that correctly? For yes. The movie?
Yes.
Some of my favorite movies I found, didn't even go to theater. Some of the movies I've talked to Jose about in the past, I currently own them, and it's like I show them to people and they're like, when did this come out?
Right.
So, I mean, hey, it doesn't have to have a big budget to be great, you know? So I'm really looking forward. I think, I could be wrong, but I don't know if Amazon or one of those streaming services is offering maybe a rental, or I might have to buy it. I'm not sure, but hey, the way I look at it is if you can't make it to the theater and you have a streaming service, it probably costs you the same amount as a movie ticket anyways. So
that's right, true. Right.
You know, watch it in the comfort of your home, some pajamas.
Honestly, I haven't been to a movie theater in probably over a decade just for that fact. I mean, I would just much rather watch it at home and I could, you know, be in my pajamas and have a cold drink and put my hand in my pants if I want to, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
But, it's.
And the funny thing is like, as long as I've known Russell, he's never really been much like into movies. Like there are times where we'd watch a movie at my place and he'd like crash or whatever. And so every I guess time. For him being, yeah, for him to sing high praise of this, it's got to be pretty good, I think.
Yeah. And so there's quite a few low budget movies that I've actually seen, that one of which, so it's going to age me a little bit, but Blockbuster, whenever Blockbuster was open, there was a Blockbuster at the corner of Slaughter Lane and South First in Austin. Mm-hmm. And whenever it closed down, I went in there and got a bunch of movies because they were just pretty much clearing everything out and movies were 28 cents each. And there was a movie that I'd come across. It came out in 2011. So it was a new movie around that time. And it's called Touchback. And it's a football movie. And it has Kurt Russell in it. And there's a few other not well-known but known actors in it. But Kurt Russell was the biggest one. And it's a movie based out of Ohio with this high school quarterback. Him and his best friend are quarterback and receiver. And they're both dating, you know, the most popular girls in the school and whatever else. And in the playoffs, or I think it was the state championship, the quarterback, the main character, dove for a touchdown and broke his leg, like jacked it up majorly, could never play football again, and ended up sticking in his hometown. He was ready to get out of the town. Like he did not want to live there. He felt like he'd outgrown it. And because he did that, he broke his leg and couldn't even really walk the rest of his life. Like he was hobbling around with a brace on and obviously didn't go play football, but his best friend ended up making it to the NFL and ended up marrying the quarterback's girlfriend from high school. And so it was like this whole thing, and he just had so many regrets. Well, he's a soybean farmer, and a freeze comes before he could harvest, and he's already on the verge of losing the ranch and all sorts of stuff. He ended up marrying a girl that he didn't know existed that he went to high school with that was in the band. And he tried to commit suicide by the exhaust of his truck. And then when he came to, he was reliving everything back in high school. And so there's a little bit of comedy in it from, you know, he's telling the girl that didn't even know that he knew she existed back then not to do certain things. And she's like skinny dipping or something like that. And he's like treating her like she's his wife. And she's like, who is this guy? Like, he doesn't even know who I am. And so it's kind of funny. He's like telling her what. Well, he ends up getting a chance to relive everything and make the difference if he goes for the touchdown or not. And I'm not going to spoil the movie by telling the ending, but it is a great movie. And it was never a big budget, never in the theaters. And I got it for 28 cents at Blockbuster. So I definitely agree with that. It's a great movie.
I think you showed me that movie, dude. It was really good. I totally forgot about that one. Man, do you remember like on a Friday night going to Blockbuster and renting movies or like renting a video game?
Dude, it was awesome.
Like, it was like the best childhood.
Right. Thing, or movie galleries. Nothing like it. Movie galleries in Kyle.
Yep. Yep. Right there by downtown Kyle.
Yep. Right there across from Four Way Auto where the CVS is now. That used to be the little Mexican restaurant, gas station, and movie gallery.
Yep.
Dude, I forgot about that.
That was pre-streetlights in Kyle.
Yeah, no four-way stops or anything.
Right. I remember when we got our first streetlight there across the highway from that intersection by the Dairy Queen. It was, there's some... I remember back in my wilder days, I was with a friend and we were doing some things we shouldn't have been doing at night. And the only light in Kyle at that time was the one at Dairy Queen. And we had stopped at the stoplight or the stop sign right there next to Four Way Auto. And he's just sitting there. My buddy is. And I'm just like, what are you doing? He's like, dude, I'm just waiting for it to turn red. I'm like, we're at a stop sign, dude. But he was looking at the stop light across the highway. Oh, some good times.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Kyle's come a long way from then. Even the, what was it, the interstates, there were two-way.
Oh, the frontage roads? Oh, dude, yep. I hated that. There was that's what I meant, the frontage roads.
Oh, yeah. And then you'd get folks, once they change them over, you know, from southbound being southbound only, northbound being northbound only.
People every driving once the wrong
still
way.
Get a, yeah, you'd still get a spurt of people driving the wrong way. It's like, oh, they didn't get the memo.
Yeah, I remember I did it a few times actually right there where the Goodyear is. I turned left coming off of it wasn't Lehman Road. Was it Lehman Road? What's that road that leads to like steeplechase and all that? There's a road that comes off, but I would turn left off of it onto the frontage road and I would realize cars are coming at me.
Was it Goforth?
No, Goforth was where I would end up turning. I don't remember the name of the road.
I don't either.
I know we lived over there.
Yeah, but I found myself doing it a few times and I'd have to turn into where that car wash was, or I'd have to turn on to go for the poor car because I was like, oh crap, I'm driving the wrong way. So it's crazy how small towns change.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I kind of miss small town Kyle, man.
Oh, I definitely do. I mean, there's a lot more to do there now. I can't complain about that, but
miss San Marcos and Austin. We're so close.
It's close enough, right?
It's not much of a drive. It's not much of a drive. That's where my family and I would, before anything was built, we'd go to Austin or San Marcos for stuff. I mean, I don't know, man. I just, it's changed so much. It's grown so freaking fast over the last few years. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. Excuse me. It's changed a lot since last time I was there, or since I left 4 years ago.
Dude, every time I come back, there's always like something new being built. It's wild how fast it's developing.
Yeah. I mean, now it's like pretty much South Austin to Kyle. There's like, there's no land anymore. Like it used to be just all land, and where the hospital is used to be just tiny house on the hill. Old man would sell cars on his fence line.
Dude, my dad bought a car from that dude once.
Really?
Yeah. That's sometimes crazy. He'd pick me up from my grandma's and we'd stop, like he'd see the vehicles outside. We'd stop and look at them. I think he ended up buying one once. Crazy, man.
Yeah, but now
Bonton used to be downtown. Center. Oh, I know.
we don't talk about Bonton, guys.
So I had a coworker that he was a smart aleck, and there was another guy from Wimberley that used to have Bonton's Butcher's deer. And when it caught fire, he had called him. He said, "Hey man, I just got a call from Bonton's. I think they had the wrong number, but they told me to tell you that your deer was ready and they cooked it for you." I was like, "Oh man, that's just messed up because it got fire."
Oh, damn.
It was funny, but I was like, "Man, that's not nice. Can't be joking about people's misfortune like that."
Well, I guess you didn't know this, Russell, but I was actually working part time at a Bonton there for a couple of months.
Oh, really?
I got big into, you know, wanting to learn how to butcher and whatnot, and you know, I went there, worked for them, and you know, I didn't really go out of there on the best terms, but yeah.
You're not the one that set the fire, are you?
No. I'm talking about actually last year at the new location.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Just making sure, man.
No.
New location's over off Highway 21, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
They're great folks, man. I got nothing bad to say about anybody there. They're all good folks there. And, you know, they do what they do and they do it well. And they've got a procedure for everything. So I have no ill words for them. They're great folks, man.
Have y'all ever watched that show, The Butcher?
No.
So it's kind of like a Forged in Fire style type of show. Like it's a competition. Nice. And they have to butcher like the strangest things. But there's a guy that lives about 10 minutes from me that was on that show. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he won it.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. It's called, I want to say his business is called Griffiths.
Okay.
And I just designed a project. We're building fiber to the home out in that area. And, I come across his place while I was out there doing the walkout and I was like, where have I seen this before? And I'd seen him on the show. I was like, that's crazy. But if I'm not mistaken, that's, I think he was cool. One of the winners. I was like, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty interesting show. I mean, I'm not, you know, big into butchery or anything like that, but it's interesting to see like, how scientific it gets, like how the cuts are made. Yes. And how you have to do them. And with like animals, like I think they had like butcher pythons and stuff like that. And there's specific ways to do it. So it's crazy, but it's a pretty good watch.
Do you remember the time that we ate rattlesnake?
Yeah, dude. I've actually done that recently.
Was it you that brought it? Was it you that brought it over?
Yes.
It was,
if I'm not mistaken, it was that 6.5-foot rattlesnake that I got from Dalen's.
I think it was. Sounds about right.
Dude, was it the one that I kept in the bed of my truck and we scared your mom with it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor mom. Oh,
man. That was around the same time that I almost killed us with a wasp flying under my glasses, right? After we went dove hunting.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we should say that story for dove season.
We should. But, we should.
But yeah, dude, that snake was interesting, dude. Maybe it was just the way that it was cooked, but I was not a fan of it.
Really?
To be quite honest. Yeah. It's just the texture. I don't know, man.
It's kind of rubbery, flaky ish. It's like in between rubbery and flaky. It's almost like alligator.
I just love alligator.
I love it.
It's similar to that. But I cooked some up a couple weeks ago, actually. And Ruth's cousins tried it and Ruth tried it and she liked it. And one of her cousins is like, dude, I think this is my favorite kind of meat now. He's like, I want to go get it again. Yeah. And so what I did, I think I cooked it the same way, but I did a different breading. So do you remember when, I guess this was probably when Adeline was a baby. And I think I had you and your brother and maybe Matteo over and, we had fish and shrimp and I did a beer batter, but instead of using beer, I used Frank's Red Hot. I did that with the rattlesnake. Oh, dude, it was so good.
That sounds good.
And so it was definitely better than that other time I made it for you. But yeah, it's good. I love eating snake. Now, python jerky, on the other hand, is I don't recommend
that. You tried python jerky?
Yeah, dude. So what is it called? Tex Best Smokehouse or something like that. There's one in Paris, Texas. But there's their gas stations and meat stores around Texas. And they have all sorts of different jerkies. They got bison and elk and, you know, typical beef jerky with all these different flavors and python and alligator jerky and all sorts of stuff. And I got the python jerky and it wasn't good. I didn't like the taste. I didn't like the taste. There was nothing about it that I liked.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know about that. That sounds, a little iffy.
It's just not a meat that needs to be dehydrated. I don't know how to explain it.
I, I feel like an animal like that, you know, it's all muscle, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I feel, you know, in my personal opinion, when I have something like that, that's not very fatty, a lot of muscle, you want to break down the protein before cooking. I feel like you'd almost have to marinate it in something acidic to help break it down and make it tender.
The way that I did this last one is I marinated it in a little bit of lemon juice and buttermilk with the snake. And oh, it was so good. And so it was a little bit better texture than the time I made it for you, Jose. Tasted better because the breading was so much better. So, but yeah, I soaked it. I think if I'm not mistaken, I soaked it overnight in buttermilk and lemon juice. And I mean, it was really good.
Interesting. Have either of you fellows tried iguana?
I have.
No, I've heard great things though.
So good. I ate it last year for my birthday. Remember, I went down to Venice? Yeah. I went to Venice with Hal and Brian from episode two, and we ate Oscars and iguana. And there were people were giving us the weirdest looks because we were staying at these little Airbnbs close to the marina, and we're just using the little grill out front. And so we had iguana and we had Oscars and we had all sorts of weird looking things cooking. So we had the iguana tails and iguana legs, and people were like, what the hell are they eating?
But I have to ask about Oscars because Oscars, don't get me wrong, are they the little black fish with the big eyeballs? They're like goldfish, or am I thinking of something else?
You're probably thinking of something else. An Oscar is similar to a cichlid. I think it actually might be a kind of South American cichlid.
Okay.
They're black or white and or white. The white ones are kind of albino with orange markings. The black ones also have orange markings. Gotcha. And they get a little bit bigger than like the palm or like the size of your hand with your fingers open.
Oh, wow.
And my buddy Brian had caught them in South Florida, if I'm not mistaken. And so he harvested those and we came up and we grilled them and we just cooked them whole. We cooked them like a brim. So we just slit the sides of them and cooked them just like that. And it was really good.
Nice.
Nice.
Dude, so speaking of Florida, I suppose this would be a good segue for your Florida trip.
Oh, yes, it would. That was definitely a trip. So I'll start with the bad news. My football team lost. It was a tough game. There was a lot of things that just didn't go our way. The bus got a flat on the way there. So we started the game without, I believe there were 16 players and our coaches were on the bus. And it was just, we definitely faced adversity. The other team scored first, got the 2-point conversion. So it was 8-0. We covered up 8-8. And then with 21 seconds left in the game, they scored. And so we lost 14-8. So it was tough. But they told us after the game, they're like, y'all are the best team we've played all year. And so, I mean, it felt good to know that we were, you know, respected by the other team. But it was definitely, you know, we could have won it, but we just didn't. So hats off to them. They played well. I hope they do good for the rest of the playoffs, but we did lose, prior to the game on Saturday. Cause I got there Friday evening. And so Saturday I got up and wanted to go fishing. So I went behind Florida State University, Panama City, and there's some flats over there. I stopped by a little tackle shop. I want to believe it was called Howell Tackle Shop near Panama City. And he told me just go out to the flats behind the college and people are catching reds and stuff out there. And so I tried that out, and very first cast, I had a crab pattern on and I had a follower, it was a little slot red. Couldn't get him to take it. And that was the only fish I saw the whole time. I mean, there was nothing out there. It was just dead. And, so I was like, well, maybe he's, you know, talking about people using bait or conventional fishermen. So I was like, well, on my way to the game, cause the game was in, Dofuniak Springs. I was staying in a town called Fountain, and I spent a lot of the day in, Panama City. Well, there's a place between Panama City and Miramar that is a fly shop. It's called Old Florida Outfitters. Great place. There's a guy in there named Brian that gave me all sorts of tips and tricks and what stuff was working and places to go. I mean, just very friendly guy. So if y'all are ever in the area, or you know, if you're going to Destin or anything like that, it's not too far. I definitely recommend swinging in there. It's called Old Florida Outfitters. But went in there and talked to him, and you know, he was telling me what flies are working and where people are catching fish at. And he said the beaches were on fire. So I was stoked. I said, okay. So I bought a bunch of flies and I was going to head out Sunday morning, to go fishing. So, I think I got back to my Airbnb at probably, I don't know, maybe midnight, and then got up and I decided to go to, Camp Helen State Park. over there in Florida. And so I went there, and then I just ended up going to the beach over by that, and was fishing for a good while. And I'd never surf fly fish before. Have either of y'all done that?
I tried it in Mexico and it didn't work out too well.
Dude.
In Montanillo.
I've never tried it. It is brutal. And so he was saying that I needed to get out like towards the turquoise water. And, so I walked out. I was probably, I don't know, maybe 150, 200 feet off the beach, and the troughs of the waves, there was like 3-4 foot swells. And the troughs of the waves were like between my hips and belly button, and the waves were coming up like towards my head. I mean, it was tough, and it was just beating me to death. And so just trying to time it between the waves and get my double haul to actually get it out there towards the turquoise water. I mean, it was tough. And so I would fish for probably 30, 45 minutes, go back, take a break, drink a bottle of water, 15 minutes and go back out. Well, it was probably like my third or fourth time going back out to the water. And I hadn't seen, like, I hadn't even seen ladyfishes, like, cause normally you could see the ladyfish inside the waves and stuff. I hadn't even seen any of that. And then I see this shadow coming from my right. And it's probably, I don't know, maybe 25, 30 feet to my right and maybe 6 feet ahead of me running along the sandbar. And I was like, sweet. Like, this is my chance to catch a redfish. Like, I'm super excited. And he said that sometime tarpon run through there. And I was like, maybe it's a tarpon. I was getting all hyped up. And I start, you know, back casting. I get a couple false casts. And I look and I'm like, that's a shark. So I stopped and I take a couple steps back. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to let him mind his business. I'm going to mind mine. He's going to mind his. He's going to keep going. I'm going to get back to fishing. Well, it gets about 6 feet to my right and it's about 6 feet out. And it charges me full speed, trying to bite me. And I had already had my fly rod. I was holding my fly rod closer to the butt section, just, you know, so I had something in case it did. And I mean, I've never been so scared in my life. I've been through a lot of things, but it scared the hell out of me. And so I swung my fly rod at it under the water, the butt of my fly rod with the reel, and was like trying to, you know, keep it away. And it charged at me, and then it kind of turned and went off. And I was like close 200 feet off the beach. And so I went back and I sat there for 15 minutes. I made a little video and posted it on my Instagram and Facebook, but I was shaking. Oh my God. I'd never been so scared. And so I sat there and decompressed for a little bit and calmed down. And, I didn't go any more than like 100 feet after that. I ended up going back out there. And so it chased me. And then I was like, well, you know, I'm not going back out there. So I went about 100 feet out, didn't really see anything. And then I came back and was taking a little break. So I was still getting beat to hell by the waves. And so I was walking back towards the beach and I see a little cruiser, and I thought it was like a ladyfish or something. And it was probably like maybe 2 feet long, 18 inches, 2 feet long. And so I'm running down the beach, casting at it, you know, like a crazy guy chasing a rooster fish or something. And then I look at it and it's a little tiger shark, a juvenile tiger shark. And so I'm casting, I have a little deceiver, olive colored deceiver on, and I'm trying to cast at it and trying to get it. I mean, it wanted meat. It didn't want no feathers and fur, but, I cast it out and I was like, well, I guess I got my payback. I got chased by a shark, and then I chased a shark. So now it's eaten.
Dude, yeah, it was
definitely an experience.
Before you even brought that story up, all I could think was shark the whole time. And then you said, oh, and I see the shadow. I'm like, it's a shark.
Yeah, dude. Oh, my God. And I've seen plenty of sharks. I've seen bonnet heads. I've seen black tips. I've seen tiger sharks, sand sharks, bull sharks. I've seen them, you know, on Port Aransas and Corpus Christi, Mustang Island. Like, I've seen them. I've never had a run-in with one, but I've seen them. And I respect them. You know, I wouldn't be against going and swimming with the sharks in a cage and doing the whole cage diving thing with the feeding frenzy. Right. Like, I respect the animals. I don't want to like deal with them, you know, in close quarters, but yeah. I respect them and they're interesting. I'm intrigued by them, but that scared the hell out of me.
I don't blame me.
Hell yeah, dude. That's freaking terrifying.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a good trip. I didn't catch anything. It's the first time in God knows how long that I've been goose egged. I mean, when me and Jose went to the Buffalo last year, I didn't catch anything, but in all honesty, I casted maybe 15 times the trip. It was just too windy and I wanted to, you know, take pictures more than anything. And I got, you know, to document Jose's whole first experience catching a smallmouth. So that was awesome to me. But, yeah, other than that, I mean, it's been probably years since I've been skunked.
Wow. That's crazy, man. That shark almost didn't get skunked though.
Right. Yeah. That shark saw my skinny legs and he's like, ooh, chicken legs.
Oh, you dude.
Get him some little chicken leggies.
So speaking of chicken, there's this, did I tell you the story about Victor and the crabbing?
With Rockport? The gallina?
Yeah, bro. Yeah. So a long time ago.
Do you know the story, Marco?
I don't.
Dude, so a long time ago, I have this friend and his family were big into the outdoors. So they would invite me camping with them, or whenever they go to the coast, they'd invite me along. And so one summer we went to Port Aransas or Rockport. I can't remember. And so we went and there was one night that we were trying to do a bit of crabbing. So they had bought this big crab net and we bought some chicken quarters from the grocery store. And so we tied them into the crab net, dropped it down on the pier, and we were catching some blue crabs. And this guy, I guess he sees us pulling up these crabs. So he comes over to us and he's an older Caucasian fella. And you know, we're just two little Mexican kids, whatever, catching crabs on the pier. And so he comes over to us and he's like, hey, what are y'all using to catch them crabs? Gallina? And Victor's like, no, man, we're using chicken.
Did he give you all a weird look after that? Like,
yeah, dude, yeah. He's like, okay. How the hell do y'all not know gallina? I was like, Victor, dude, gallina is chicken. He's like, oh, yeah, man, we're using chicken. I was like, dude, get out of here, bro.
Oh, that's dude. Freaking awesome.
Freaking Vic, man. That guy's hilarious. We have to have him on sometime. Man,
he is. Have you talked to him recently?
I have not. Not in some time. But yeah, he and I,
we get him on the podcast.
Dude, we got so many damn stories, man. It's, yeah, we got a lot.
Have you gents had shark?
Dude, it's so good. I've had lemon pepper black tip.
Yeah.
I've heard that. I think it depends on the shark, because if I'm not mistaken, I believe they can excrete like through their skin.
Most of them will.
Yeah, excrement and stuff like that. So it can be kind of nasty depending, but I've heard like bonnet heads are pretty good. I've heard black tip are pretty good. I've personally never tried it, although I would give it a shot if the opportunity presented itself, I think.
So I caught a couple years back, I caught a spinner shark.
Yeah.
Which apparently they're sort of related. I could be wrong. So, you know, just apparently the black tip and spinner shark are slightly related. But I caught the shark and I kind of knew most of them urinated through the skin. Mm-hmm. And they had a marine biologist on the ship at the time. And she, you know, explained to me, she's like, no, you can. I caught the spinner shark. It was a 6-foot spinner shark. And man, we went out there, the waves were smashing against the boat. It was a rough trip. And top of that, you know, it didn't help that I was hungover. We had been drinking the night before and it wasn't a good deal for us at all. But I catch a 6-foot shark and they bring it on board. And I felt bad because I'm like, man, if I'm not going to eat it, what, you know, why would I even kill it? But the marine biologist that was on board, she said she was a marine biologist. She explained to me that they have a urethra. Mako shark, black tip, and spinner shark are the three sharks that have urethra. If there's any more, I'm sorry guys that I got this wrong, but for sure those three. So I was like, yeah, I felt better about it. Took it home. I mean, I literally got 5 Ziploc bags, the quart size bags of shark steaks, and there was 5 of them in each one, and they were about in length, about 6 to 7 inches long, about 3 inches thick each one.
That's awesome.
So for about a year and a half, we were serving out shark every time somebody would come over, you know, different ways. You know, I grilled them, pan seared them, did a balsamic vinaigrette with them and a whole bunch of other stuff. I think at that point I was just getting into like digging really hard into cooking. So I don't think I did a phenomenal job, which I kind of feel bad because I feel like I disrespected the shark by, you know, cooking it and not cooking it the way I mean, if I would take that same shark right now, I think I could do a phenomenal job, but now I just kind of feel like I disrespected it. But yeah, I mean, you got to go through those learning curves, I guess.
Oh yeah,
right. But right. Yeah, it was still pretty. It was good. I just think I could have done a better job. If you guys have ever had swordfish, it tasted similar to that. It was just a thick fillet, not flaky, just like steak-like.
Yeah, it's kind of like tuna.
Ahi right. Tuna. Yes. Just like that. Mild in flavor. Anything you soaked it in, of course, it would absorb it and have that flavor with it. But yeah, it was pretty good. No complaints on it.
Interesting. Dude, I kind of want to try it now, man. But
dude, we need
to catch one.
Dude, I'm down.
Let's go.
Bro, have you ever seen the videos, I think in Florida, with the spinner sharks, like how they jump out of the water and just like...
Yes, just, they're acrobatic.
Dude, it's wild.
That would be freaking awesome to have one on the end of a fly line.
Bro.
Oh, yes.
Dude, Makos too? Makos can soar.
Yes.
Makos dude, I love fly. Watching those videos of them catching Makos on 14 weight fly rods. Oh, yes. Dude, it would be awesome.
It's amazing how acrobatic those fish are. They can straight up fly, dude. It's wild.
Have you seen when they tie a fly for Mako sharks? Well, I saw one get tied one night before I started fly tying. I watched this guy just pack on red feathers on red feathers on red feathers on red feathers.
Really?
It was blood red.
That's awesome.
I remember watching it and being like almost in a trance. I was like, wow, man, this is amazing. I could do this. And of course, I've never tied anything like that. But yeah, it'd be awesome to go chase Mako sharks on the fly rod, man. I can't imagine. You know, the drag system you'd need to keep one of those on.
Oh, man.
Right. You definitely need something major.
Yeah.
That would be freaking awesome, though. That's one thing is I want to catch a shark, obviously. I would love to catch a marlin on a fly rod. Tarpon is obviously on there. I'm not confident enough in my skills. Like, I know some guides that could take me out and get me on them, but I'm not confident enough in my skills to be able to make the cast, you know, and I don't feel like spending upwards of $1,000 for someone to take me out for me to be the issue. I don't even get to hook into one. So
I agree.
I need to go carp fishing more to practice my sight casting. Then I think I'd be all right. But yeah, it's, I want to, but I just don't think I'm not confident enough.
Carp fishing is very humbling. I'm not going to say I've been persistent at chasing them, you know, the past couple of years. I've only been fly fishing. I did the math this morning, actually. It's been going on 3.5 years.
Really?
Consistently fly fishing. And, I went out with Chris Fowler one day and, you know, we had a blast just hiking through a bunch of trails and whatnot on the Pernalis River. And it was just the view was amazing. It was hot, but man, we found a nice little pool at the end of the day and just kind of soaked up in there, you know, for about 30 minutes. And I learned so much from him about carp. As of now, I went back to the Pernalis a couple weeks back and I was telling Jose the story. I saw tons of carp, but for some reason, none of them were eating. A lot of the times they'll go face down, you know, into the dirt. And that's really when I've been told to cast at them. And I finally, you know, after all day of chasing these guys around, I'm seeing them in packs. I see this one darker shade one, and I tell my buddy Blaze from Wisconsin, I'm like, hey, that one just went face down. That's the one. And I throw a carpet bomb at it, land it right in front of its nose. It was a perfect cast, perfect situation for that thing to eat. I see him eat, and I get excited, and I set into him like I would do a redfish because that's the main thing I've been fishing for as of lately. From last year to now, and I get 2 seconds with him on it. It takes off, and I'm sitting there with my glass rod just bent over and excited, and heartbreak sets in, and I just rip that hook right out of him, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm sitting there cursing up a storm. People are walking around in the state park looking at me like, what's wrong with this guy? And it was sad, man, but, you know, just it's still the experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, I failed, but you know, I'll get back out there and try it again. It's no big deal. But yes, they're very spooky fish, and apparently from what I've been told is they emit some kind of chemical into the water when they spook, and it scares the rest. It's almost like a warning for the rest of the fish. I don't know how true that is, but that's just what I've heard.
Oh, it makes sense. I don't know if it's true or not, but that definitely makes sense because there's been numerous times that right outside where I live, you know, they come in here in hordes, and I'll spook one, and then next thing you know, you start seeing dust clouds going across the lake. And it's like, yep, they all gone.
Dude,
smart fish.
They are very smart. And man, I have been on a carp kick, even though I've never caught. I've hooked a few. They've whooped me every time. I managed to catch a koi fish before I caught a carp, which is weird, still weird to me. But
beautiful fish, by the way,
dude. That was a crazy, crazy catch, man. I was freaking out. I think Russell. He saw me shaking and stuff, dude. I was so scared I was gonna lose that fish. But I hooked. So during COVID, my buddy and I went fishing at a place in College Station, And I kept seeing like something come up and suck stuff off the surface. I thought it was just like some bluegill or something. So I had a Lano bug on my rod. It was a three weight because I was expecting just to catch like small bass and panfish or whatever. So I was very undergunned. But I threw my fly over there where I kept seeing the rises. And then I see these big rubber lips come up and like suck some bread down that someone threw out. I was like, holy crap. And then I recasted. And he comes up and sucks down my Lano bug, and it took a second to register with what had happened. And I just set the hook, dude, and this thing freaking took off, and it like jumped 6 feet out of the water. It was insane. I didn't even know they could do that. And I fought it for about an hour on my three-weight TFO finesse rod, and it was pretty bad. Like, I feel bad because I'm sure the fish was tired. I know how I was tired. And so I finally kind of got it close to the bank, and there's this kid there, and he reaches down for the net and with the net, and the carp breaks through the rubber basket of the net. And so it breaks through, my line's going through the net. And my plan was to just pass the rod through the hole and then just continue fighting it. I feel bad, man. This kid grabs the line. I was like, no, don't grab it. And then boom, pops. And I lost the fish. And that kid, like, I could see in his face, he felt so bad, man. I felt bad. But ever since then, dude, I was just like, I've been on this kick where I need to catch carp. And when we did, I think the three of us, we did that float on the lower Colorado, I hooked a massive one. Mm-hmm. And I didn't stand a chance either because I forgot my bigger rod in the truck. So I only had my three weight again, and I hooked it by accident and got whooped. Like, didn't even have a chance. And so I'm 0-for-2 on carp right now. My goal for the summer is to catch one. We'll see.
Dude, you should. Hopefully you can get on one. That lower Colorado trip was freaking, it was fun, but y'all remember at the very end when I almost died?
Yeah, dude, what happened there?
What happened? What happened?
So I don't know. The current took me into that log jam in those trees, and I couldn't get out of it. Like, I got sucked into it, and I don't know what got stuck, but something on my kayak got stuck. And then I had the camera on the I had a pole on the back of my kayak, and I had a camera on it, and that broke off. It pulled the rivets out of my kayak. Camera went in the water. I reached around to grab the camera. I was still stuck, though, and so water started coming on board from behind because the current. And somehow I was able to break free. And, dude, I had grass and leaves and bugs and water and everything all on the kayak. My camera was, I thought it was Dunsky's, but it came back to life. It just ruined the battery. The battery got all corroded, which is fine. But, yeah, dude, it was, I don't even know what happened. I was kayaking. I was going straight. And then I started trying to cut it right because it had a little bend. And I just got sucked right into it, which, I mean, it happens. But I just don't know how I got stuck so bad. And then with the front being stuck and the water coming from behind coming on, it was just like a whole thing. Luckily, I didn't really lose anything. I just got a little cut up, and then, you know, camera got a little messed up. But yeah, it was strange,
dude.
But I couldn't get out, and then y'all were already past, and so there was like nobody that could help. I was like, this sucks.
Man. Yeah, it's those river the river systems are really gnarly, especially the San Marcos. The past few times I've been out there, when I had my Wilderness Systems kayak, I didn't have so much of a problem with it. The Diablo Amigo that I have now is a great kayak. You know, it's wide platform and whatnot, and it's, you know, I can stand up quickly on it. But I've taken a few spills in the San Marcos. That's the only river I've taken. Well, no, never mind. I'm sorry, the Lano River as well. Yeah, I forgot about that. I just thought about it. I was like, never mind. Two rivers.
Dude, man.
And for the same way, Jose, I've taken a spill in the San Marcos River. The only difference was when we did it on the Lano, it was hot. So I didn't mind getting in the water. When I did it on the San Marcos, it was 35 degrees out. I was freezing my ass off, guys.
Dude, that's not.
Yeah, it was cold, man. Not I was. Good. The only good thing is that the sun was out, so right when I jumped on that rock, I just sat there and dried out for about an hour while my buddy was looking for his glass rod that he lost, which I had no idea. He was above me on the river, and I'm seeing him kind of walk around. I'm like, what's this guy doing? Is he, like, chasing fish around? And he's doing that for an hour, and he finally calls me, and he's like, hey, I lost my fly rod. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm so sorry. I feel like kind of like a jerk because I've been sitting down here waiting for you. And he's like, no, you know, I lost my rod. Help me look for it. So we go out there, look for about another hour. We spent 2 hours in that spot, It was about knee deep water to ankle deep in some spots. Well, he finally gives up, and it was a pretty expensive glass rod. We paddled down about 30 yards, and it's sitting on the left-hand side floating on the water. I'm like, wait, I didn't think about this. It's a fiberglass rod. It's going to float, you know. We should have been down the river already, but whatever, you know. Wow. Still had a good time. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I've lost a few rods. But you taking a dive like that reminds me of the freaking Little Missouri River up here, man. God, I've been there 5 times, 3 of which I've fallen in. With like in the wintertime with waders and gotten water in my waders. And the first time, I'd never been trout fishing before. Me and Jose were up here.
Oh, yeah.
And we went trout fishing and we went down there. And first thing we get there, I slipped and fell in the water and got water in my waders. And it was what, 28 degrees outside, Jose, or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was really cold, and it's a cold water discharge. And so I'd fallen and gotten water in my waders, and I said, we just got here and I got Jose here. I was like, we're not turning around and going back just cause I'm cold. And so I was like, whatever. And so he, I believe, had caught one or two. I hadn't caught any. And then we were walking further. Was it upstream or downstream? I think it was downstream. And, we were walking up this embankment and then back down, and I had a bamboo net, landing net, on my back, or like, clipped to my back of my waders, and we're walking down, and I slipped and fell. And when I slipped forward, my foot got caught in a branch and like went backwards. So I was pretty much like laying on top of my legs behind me, but the bamboo net had broke. And so it made this loud snap, and Jose turns around and thought I broke my legs. My leg is under me and backwards, and he heard that loud snap.
Dude, it was loud. I was like, oh shit, Russell, are you okay? And dude, he was just laying there, and he was like, ah. I was like, freaking out, man. I thought I was got to carry him back to the truck. And then he stands up and he's fine. But his net's all jacked. I was like, oh, dude.
Yeah. And then what hurt was the net had broken and stabbed me in my side, but I didn't know at that time. I just knew that my ribs were hurting. I was like, I'm okay. Well, then we go down and I finally hook my first trout. Never hooked a trout before. Hook my first trout and go to grab my net to land it, and my net's flopping and broke. I was like, and then I didn't even get to touch the fish. It came off like right when I brought it. I grabbed the leader and brought it up, and it came off the hook. And I was like, man, I didn't even get to get a picture of the first trout I've ever caught.
Dude, that sucks.
But that was the first time. And then the next two times. So back then I just had like cheap rubber waders with the boots attached.
Right.
Boot foots. And then I decided after that I wanted to get some stocking waders with some wading boots. And so I did that. And they were brand new corkers with felt bottoms, because I heard felt bottoms give you better traction on that type of substrate. And slipped and fell in the water again. And I was like, okay, so I avoided going there for the rest of the year. The next year I said, I'm going to give the Little Mo one more chance. I go and I didn't fall in. I was like, sweet. So then I went again a couple months later and I fell in again. And then I've been one time since and haven't fallen in. But I was like, what is up with me in this river? Like, I've never fallen anywhere else. And I've spent a lot of time on the Washita, on the Caddo. I've gone to the Little Red, the White. I've never fallen in, but it's always the Little Missouri that I fall into.
Have you caught a lot of fish there? Time.
A decent amount. They're all stocker rainbows, but nothing big, nothing exciting. But if I just want to catch a fish, I don't care, you know, how big it is, then yeah, I'll go there and catch those little mini stocker rainbows out there. They're fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and I have that in common. I caught my first trout on the fly rod with Jose, I believe.
On the
or
quad?
Was it on the quad? Yes. I may be wrong about that. I'll have to go back and look at it. It's been so long, but I think my dad and I went up to Oklahoma over in Beaver Dam, and I might have caught that before I went to the Guad with Jose. But I could be wrong.
I want to go fish in Oklahoma. I was actually talking to a guy down in Florida. His name's Tucker, I believe, Tucker Griffin, and he's from Oklahoma. He goes to Oklahoma State, and he was out there fly fishing on the pier when I was out there. And so we got to talking about all sorts of stuff. Awesome guy. I'll put his Instagram handle in the description, and y'all can go check him out. He has some good content, but yeah, pretty cool guy. And he's from Oklahoma, and he says he does some trout fishing up there. So I want to go sometime. I know that briefly me and Jose had talked about possibly getting a cabin somewhere in Oklahoma for our buddy Matty Ice's birthday. Wasn't that what it was?
I think it was my
birthday.
I wanted to go to Oklahoma. to go fishing.
Okay.
But that didn't happen. I think we ended up going to New Mexico instead.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Forgot that's when it was. So yeah, but I still have that thing. I was like, I still want to go check it out.
I do too. Yeah, dude. I want to go to Oklahoma too, man. I think I'd rather go to Florida before Oklahoma, honestly.
Oh, for sure. I want to go to South Florida though. Go get on some peacocks or some tarpon, even if it's juvenile tarpon. Dude, get on some tarpon.
I mean, in the canals, man, we can catch those juvie tarpon. What else? Peacocks, Oscars.
Little peacocks. We can catch Oscars, Mayans, jaguars.
What are the jackknife, clown knife fish.
Clown knife fish. Yep.
Dude, those things are cool looking. Have you ever seen them?
Dude, they're weird. Yeah, they're weird, but they're cool.
That would be pretty sick on the fly.
What else do they have? Don't they have bowfin there too?
I'm sure.
Snakehead?
I don't know about snakehead, but bowfin I think they should have.
That would be fun.
It'd be a lot of fun.
I want to catch some weird fish like that.
Dude, there's a guy on YouTube. I think his name is Eric Estrada. He's a tattoo. No, he's an artist. I don't think he's a tattoo artist, but I think he's just an artist. And but he's also a fly fisherman, and he fishes around Florida. Dude catches like he has some pretty cool videos of catching like juvenile tarpon on a 5-weight. He's caught. I think he found a pond with pacu, and he caught some hooked some pacu.
Really,
yeah, cooked some pacu.
Nice.
All kinds of peacock. He's got a pretty cool channel, man. Highly recommend it. Just check it out. But yeah, dude, Florida would be a lot of fun to check out.
Let's go,
dude. I'm down.
We need to plan a trip for sure.
We could make a road trip out of this.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go out with Brian when I went down there. So Marco, me and Jose have this friend Brian that lives in Tallahassee.
We follow each other. I think we've talked a little bit from time to time. He made a comment about my fish tacos at one point, and we kind of shared that out. Yep. It's pretty cool.
He does love some food, but yeah, I was hoping to get able to meet up with him when I was there. Unfortunately, it wasn't able to happen, but he's talked about us going down there, and he has a boat taking us out, go chase some snook or some peacocks and stuff like that. And so, God, someday we need to make it happen.
Let's
plan it,
boys. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
That'd be sick, man. Yeah. We can do a catch and cook with some those little, what are they called? Oscars.
Yep. Oscars would be a good catch and cook. I was thinking about that recently. I come across a YouTube channel the other day. It's what's it called? I think Northwest Fishing Secrets or something like that. And there's a guy that goes to a bunch of alpine lakes up there, and he's a conventional fisherman, but he does like 3 or 4 day camping trips and documents them. And he catches all sorts of different like brook trout, rainbow trout and stuff like that, browns. And but he does a lot of catch and cooks, and it's interesting to watch. And so I've been thinking about that lately. I was like, man, I'd love to go to an alpine lake and do that.
That'd be really cool. I can. I think Marco has invited me over for dinner once, and he made some fish tacos. Mm-hmm. He can make some bomb fish tacos, dude.
Thank you.
So we got to.
I haven't had fish tacos in forever.
Dude, what I've been wanting is some ceviche, man.
Man,
I'm not trying to, ceviche.
You know, rain on anybody's parade, but I made a, what was it, Saturday? Cut some chickens up, some whole chickens, and I threw them on the smoker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of knew they were going to take a while. I didn't know how long, but I did pretty much spatchcock style. And I smoked them on low heat. And, you know, I called my wife at the time when I was picking up the food from HEB. And I'm like, hey, they have some ahi here. I want to make some ceviche. Are you cool with that? She's like, yeah, it's fine. You know, no biggie. And I was like, it's going to be like an appetizer before we eat. No biggie. Okay, she okays it. I get about a pound and a quarter, which it's because I go over the top with it. I've got to eat a lot of it to get my fill. And I go and make it. You know, I add my avocado. Well, no, I didn't add avocado this time. I find that avocado kind of makes it creamy, so I leave it till the end. But I did my lime juice, the mahi, and jalapenos. We did onion, tomato, and, of course, a couple seasonings, which is just like salt and pepper. And we're eating, and we're sitting there just waiting on the chicken. And this chicken didn't come out till almost 1 a.m. And I was like, man, I'm so glad. Yeah, I know. I was surprised by that, because I'm like, what the hell's going on? Why is it taking so long? And now with the chicken being spatchcock, it breaks down that layer of, you know, having to smoke through the whole chicken. if you're laying it flat on the grill. So I was surprised, man. Not till 1 a.m. it finally hit like 169. I was like, okay, pull them off now and just let them rest for a little bit. But she was telling me, she's like, man, I'm so glad he made that ceviche, because she's like, I would have been grumpy as hell if he didn't make food. I was like, oh, well, just ceviche saves the day again.
Dude, the last few times that Marco and I have gone down to the coast, the spots that we go to, it's been kind of tough. Like the fish can be really, really finicky. And it's not that we have a problem finding them. We can find them. It's getting them to eat that's been the problem. And in the last few times that I managed to catch one, I've always let them go. But dude, here lately, man, I've really been wanting to try and get some fish for some fresh ceviche. Man, we gotta make a run down the coast, Marco.
Let's go.
I've been wanting to go so freaking bad, dude.
One of the guides down there had said a while back that black drum was his favorite. You know,
for ceviche or just in general?
For ceviche. So really? I did try black drum and it's good, but it does have more of an oily texture to it. So if you're good with that, it's going to be good. If you don't like the oily texture, then you're probably going to stick with redfish. I've never had sheep's head, so I don't know if anybody makes ceviche with sheep's head or not, but I've never even caught one to begin with, so I can't even go down that route. But redfish is good.
I've had fried sheep's head and it's really good, but
yeah,
when it comes to ceviche, I've only ever had it with redfish and it's been phenomenal. I heard sea trout ceviche is good. Never had
that.
It
is good. Yes, sea trout.
Yeah, I think
I've never had black drum in general.
It's good. I've had it fried. I don't think I've had it blackened or anything like that. It's I like it. It's not bad.
Y'all ever had hardhead?
No.
Trust me, it's pretty good.
But I'm not gonna lie. We went to Porto.
I prefer gaff top, but hardhead works too.
I've had gaff top. I don't mind gaff top, but I don't know. I don't know if I can give myself to eat hardhead.
I caught a pretty decent size one in Port O'Connor one year on some bait. I just chunked it out and I was fishing, you know, on the shoreline and just threw it out in the deep end. And this thing pulled drag on a 3000 Shimano reel. I was like, what the heck is this? I thought I had a red. I was so excited to pull it up. And I'm like, holy hell, man, look at the size of this thing. Show my buddy and throw it out. And then like months later, I find out there's a tournament for Gap Top. And I'm like, great. I mean, could have had a good size one there because I've never seen one that big in person. So I was like, oh, man. Might have missed.
I caught a monster one year. I was fishing out in Copano Bay, and I hooked one because typically I would have my thicker rod out there, 3000 series reel out past the lights, trying to get into a big ugly or something, and then I would have my little ugly stick finesse rod that I would typically throw like little glow worms on or something and run it through the lights, or maybe a little shrimp trying to catch a speckled trout, and I was like, I'm not catching anything. So I threw a little piece of shrimp on it and threw it out right on the edge of the lights. And the line started taking off and set the hook. And I'm fighting it, and it's running across other people's lines. And I'm thinking I got a black drum or something on it, or maybe even a stingray.
Right.
And I was just, this thing was fighting like hell. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And so I ended up landing, and it was a big old gaff top. And I don't remember the exact measurements, but I want to say it was like 28 inches or something like that. Jesus. And the record for Copano Bay is like 29 inches. Like it was an inch shy of being a record trout or a record gaff top. And that thing was freaking massive. But I would have never guessed it was a gaff top by the way that it was fighting. But that thing was freaking huge. And I caught it on a little, medium action ugly stick.
Nice. That's a big gaff top.
Yeah, dude. That is.
Dude, it was massive.
I remember whenever I was doing my undergrad in Kingsville, some buddies and I went out to where was it? I think we might have gone to Mustang Island or something like that one night, and we were fishing on the beach, and we met this guy. I don't know if he was just like a beach bum or what, but he was just chilling there. He had a fire going and everything, and he sees us fishing. He's like, "Hey, if y'all catch anything, can I have it?" I was like, "I mean, yeah, sure, I guess." And so I kept catching a bunch of hardheads, and my friend's like, "Dude, aren't you going to give that to him?" I was like, "Dude, it's a hardhead. I don't know if he'd want that." And he's like, "I don't think he cares." So I asked him, I was like, "Hey, man, do you want these hardheads?" He goes, "Yeah, dude, I'll take them." So we just, whatever hardheads we got, we'd catch that were that we could keep. We'd give them to him. And this guy had, from the fire that he had going, created like a little bed of coals. And then he would put the hardheads whole on the coals and cook them like that. I was like, huh, interesting. And I don't know how it turned out. Like I mean, I don't know. I assume he, I don't know if that was just like what he got by on, or if he just enjoyed hardhead, or maybe, I don't know, man, but I was not about to eat that, dude.
They're not bad, man. And I'm one of those people where I'll try anything. Like, I mean, I've had Rocky Mountain oysters and I've eaten some strange things, and I'm okay to try it once. And yeah, that's kind of how I felt about a hardhead. Cause what had happened was it had swallowed the hook and I couldn't get the hook out, and I knew the fish was going to die anyways. And I don't like killing stuff if I'm not going to harvest it. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just flay it out. And, you know, I ended up throwing it on the grill, wrapped with some tin foil with some lemon pepper and lemon juice. It was pretty good. I mean, it's just like a preseason catfish if you think about it.
maybe under the right circumstances, I would try it. But like cook like that, like whole, not even gutted or anything.
That's crazy.
I'm not gonna do that. But if it was like filleted and everything, then perhaps I'd give it a try. But
so easy to clean. I don't understand why he wouldn't just gut it.
I don't know, man. Not my place to ask. I was like, all right, dude, here, right, take right. it if you want it.
There's a book that talks about, I forgot the title of it, but it's pretty much telling you how to use the whole fish, you know. Yeah. And it's a book that I've been wanting to read for a while now, and I just, you know, kind of forget that it's there and never take the time to go and look for it. But it's a book that I really want to pick up and actually get into. And, you know, when we pick up fishing again at the coast, trying to utilize the whole fish instead of scrapping it. A lot of the times, you know, the fish throats for the longest time on the reds, I was throwing them out. And then, you know, somebody tells me, they're like, oh, that's the best part. And they weren't lying. I took them off one day, and Denise and I baked them in some butter and seasonings. And that really is what they call, you know, some people have called the poor man's lobster. It's good stuff. Really? Yeah, it was weird. I don't know how many reds that I caught that I've chunked out. You know, not saying that I've caught so many, right? But the ones that I have caught, I mean, there's a few that I just chunked out, just fillet after filleting. So,
dude, that reminds me of a. So, have you ever had redfish or even black drum, like the ribs?
I don't think so,
dude.
I haven't.
So they, on like the bigger fish, they can get pretty meaty. They're pretty damn good, man. So another story. So when, again, in Kingsville, we'd go fishing in Baffin Bay sometimes. Mm-hmm. And during, I don't remember what time of year it was, but there'd be like the black drum would start running into Baffin Bay. And if you go at the right time, dude, you can slay them off the pier. So me and my buddies, this is what we would do. And when we were out there one day, there's this one guy, he was kind of drunk, and I don't know why, man, but he just starts talking to me, and apparently he and his girl at the time were going through some shit. And so he was just like venting to me. I was just trying to be nice and like, listen, whatever. It was kind of weird, but he knew his stuff when it came to fishing and everything. And at this point I hadn't done a lot of like saltwater fishing. But we caught some black drum, and I was like, hey man, like, do you have a recommended way of like how to fillet these fish? And he goes, yeah, man. He goes, come by. I forget what the place is called, like the Elks Lodge or something like that. He said, come by the Elks Lodge tomorrow, man. I'll show you how to clean them. I was like, cool. And he gave me his number and everything. So we kept the fish on ice. We just gutted them and we kept them on ice. And then, we meet up with them the next day. And, dude, we walk in there and everyone is like plastered at like noon. And my friends and I were like, what the hell? Where are we right now? And this guy was like in the back doing something, whatever. And he told us to call him Captain Pumbaa. That's what he told us to call him, right? And so he shows us how to fillet these fish. And I still actually use this method whenever I do, because I found that I get the most meat doing it this way. And when you do, like, when you, after you fillet, you kind of like put your hand in between like the spine of the fish and where the ribs are, and you can break the ribs free from the rest of the body. Hmm. And so you have like the fillet, and then you'll have the ribs. So you can cut out the ribs from the fillet, and then you can just like, just remove the skin or whatever, descale them or just fillet them off, to fillet that like the skin part from the meat. But dude, it is really good, like smoked or whatever, or barbecued. I've barbecued them. I've seasoned them, put them in butter, wrapped them in foil, and like threw them on the grill. Dude, so good, man.
We're gonna have to try that method next time, man.
Bro, I'll show you how to do it, dude.
That sounds amazing.
It's really good, and it's crazy, man. Because like I filleted fish for other people, and like, do y'all want the ribs? They're like, no. I was like, for real? So I would just take them, man. Like I was like, if you don't want them, I'll take them, whatever. But so this guy cut the Pumbaa, and after he showed us how to fillet these fish, he's like, hey, man, next time y'all go to the pier, let me know. I'll meet you out there. I was like, cool. So we're getting ready. This is like maybe a couple weeks after the fact. We're getting ready to go fishing again. And I was like, you know, he helped us out. I'm going to reach out to him and see if he wants to meet us out there. So dude, I call the number that he gave me. This is the number that cause he also took pictures of the fish and sent them to us. So I know for a fact that that's his number. And so I call it and this woman answers. And she's like, hello. I was like, yeah, I didn't even know his name. He literally just told us to call him Captain Pumbaa. I was like, is Captain Pumbaa there? And she's like, I'm sorry. We don't have anybody here by that name. But she's like, so what are you into? And I was like, what do you mean? What am I into? She's like, yeah, like, are you into like men on men, priest on nun? I was like, what? She goes, yeah, she's like, just tell me what you're into. We probably have a plan, you know, like for $50 a month. And she starts going like rattling this stuff off. I was like, ma'am, I think I have the wrong number. She goes, no, I don't think you do. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure I do. So I hung up, dude. I was like, what the hell is that about? So I'm looking at my phone and like I looked at the text message and it's all the same. It's supposed to be Captain Poop. And I'm like, dude, what the f-? And I just started walking to my truck so we can go. And then my phone starts ringing and it says it's Captain Pumbaa. And I was like, oh shit. And I was like, do I answer? Do I not answer? So I decided to answer. And he's like, hey, Jose, how's it going, man? I was like, it's going all right, man. And he goes, yeah, dude, I just heard that you were looking for me. I was like, yeah, just, you know, we're going to go fishing and see if you want to go. He's like, nah, man, I can't. I got some stuff going on tonight, but I appreciate it. I was like, all right, cool. No problem. And after that, I was like, dude, I wonder if Captain Pumbaa is just like his alias. Like, I wonder what kind of shit that dude does.
Right.
Dude, but I was like,
I wonder what his plans were that night.
Dude, so I was like, I'd never call that guy again.
That's freaking weird, man.
Freaking weird, bro.
That's hilarious, though.
I'm having a sip of that Weller 107 that you gave to me, Jose, or that we traded.
Yeah, how was it?
Oh, man, it gets better every time I open the bottle and have a sip out of it. It gets better, man. I'm still up above the label right now, but it's really good stuff, man.
Nice. I don't think I've ever tried it.
I haven't had Weller in so long. I mean, obviously, I haven't had that one, but yeah, I haven't had Weller in general.
It's become really hard to find.
Really? Yeah,
I mean, the Special Reserve, you can still find that, and they keep bumping up the prices like crazy because it's Weller, but 12-year, 107, single barrel is one of the ones I've never seen out in the wild. There's a few other ones out there that just, yeah. It's nuts. Create your own personal bourbon, I think, the CYPB, other ones, but yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, we're talking about outdoor stuff, but I figured I had to mention it.
Did you see that Buffalo Trace is releasing another Weller product?
Yes, I did.
Dude, that's going to be another one that's going to be hard to find, if not impossible.
I'd corner that right now and just find it, pick a few out, and hold on to them for like 2 years.
Two. Man, the bourbon thing is so crazy. So you and Danny got me into it. I had to step back from it because I already have too many hobbies, and the hobbies I have are already expensive as it is. I didn't need another one. The bourbon thing is crazy. I do, don't get me wrong, I do enjoy sipping on a good bourbon, but it's a bit wild. It's a bit much for me, I think.
I just learned to buy what I like, and that's it. You know, I'm not to collect anything. You know, I was just going through that spurt there where I just wanted to find the ones that I like. And I'm so happy that I was able to actually find stuff that's not as hard to find that I do enjoy and that other people are like, oh, it's garbage. It's like that old Forrester single barrel. That's a good bottle, man. I don't care who it comes from. As of now, I've only had two of them, but this one I just had right now is pretty good.
So. What's your favorite sipper right now?
Right now, I'm not going to lie to you. One of my buddies gifted me an Eagle Rare, not a store pick, just a regular Eagle Rare on Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I opened it up a few weekends ago, and I'm not huge on Eagle Rare, but this bottle in particular is just, it's tasty, man. It really, it has, remember how Danny explained the Eagle Rare 17 had like a cherry Coke taste to it?
Yeah.
This one has that taste to it. So I almost feel like maybe they might have mistaken it. I mean, I doubt it, but still, it's just nice to imagine that. Maybe I'm drinking Eagle Rare 17 and I don't know it.
Dude, I've had several bottles of Eagle Rare, and they've all been so different from one another.
Yes.
But my favorite one did have notes of cherry. And
That's what this has.
Yeah, I've had some that were like super oaky or like tannic. Or whatever, yeah. It wasn't my favorite, but it wasn't bad by any means. But Eagle Rare is a solid bottle, especially for the price.
I don't know if I've ever had Eagle Rare.
I've got some here for you, Russell.
Actually, did you have a bottle of Eagle Rare there at your last place in College Station, I'd say?
So, do you remember the time that I went up to Arkansas to visit and y'all's cat stole the flies that I tied? Or no, sorry, the materials. So yeah. I think if I'm not mistaken, I believe I brought a bottle of Eagle Rare. I think you tried it there.
I see. Didn't you bring the Angel's Envy up then too?
Oh, that's another good one.
No, you bought me Angel's Envy for my birthday one year when you were still living in Kyle.
Yeah, and I think you didn't pop it. I thought you said you didn't pop it and you brought it up because you wanted to pop it with me. I'm not mistaken.
We popped it in your house because Mateo was there. We shot it. Or he shot it. Sorry.
Dude, that's right.
You gifted it to
me. Dude, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, we were still living in Kyle, bro. We were, you gifted me that bottle. And I think I was still in College Station at that time. And so, just life and things. We were never, like, none of us were really ever in the same place all at once. And then finally, for whatever reason, we were. And so I brought the bottle because I told you I wasn't going to pop it until we were all there to try it.
Yeah.
And that was our first time that we tried it.
That was a good one.
It was a good one. Have you tried the rye, the Angel's Envy rye?
I have not.
Ooh, I've got one right here.
Dude, that is dangerous, man.
It's very sweet too.
It is. It's like a dessert almost, man. Mm-hmm. It's like butterscotch and maple syrup. It is crazy.
Yes. It's very good.
Speaking of butterscotch, have either of y'all ever fat washed rum?
Oh no. I can't drink rum.
Dude, I love rum.
No?
I love rum.
I mean, it depends. I have drank a few and I can't recall which bottles, but man, I always resort back to bourbon. I always go back to the bourbon, man. It's hard for me to stray away from something I like.
Dude, well, are you talking about like mixer rums or like sipper rums?
Sipper rums. But I'm pretty sure they were cheap stuff too, because I was like 21 and 22, you know? And it's like, I was just buying whatever I could. And I was like, oh, it's tequila rum. And believe it or not, I would buy Patron a lot because, you know, of course, rap songs made it very famous.
Right.
So that was the deal. You had to have Patron. You were the cool guy if you had Patron.
Dude, one of my favorite bottles, this a friend of mine, actually in College Station, he came over for dinner one day and he brought a bottle of Diplomático.
Oh, that stuff's so good.
Dude, I think it was in the dark green bottle.
Didn't you leave that one up here?
Reserva Especial or something like that? Dude, that one is so good. I think I did. I think I brought it for you to try. I think I left it up there.
Yeah, because I see it sitting on my little liquor cabinet right now.
Dude, it's badass. It makes a really good Cuba Libre too, man. It's a really, really good rum. I enjoy that one quite a bit.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm not big on like mixed drinks or cocktails or anything like that. But I did tell Denise the other day. I was like, which is my wife. We were talking. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna be a little bit more open about cocktails because I enjoy food so much that this stuff probably pairs off really well with food. So I just, you know, my thing is like, I hate some, and it's weird for me to say this. I love sweets in general. Okay. I love ice cream. I love bourbon. I love chocolate. For some reason, when it comes to alcohol, it can't be like like anything that has like any kind of like sweet syrup in it, it makes me want to just, you know, feel sick. So I tend to stay away from that stuff. I'd rather just stick with the bourbon and get the sweet, the little bit of sweetness out of there, like a wood chocolate, you know, like a dark chocolate.
I see.
Yeah.
That's really
weird. See, I love mixed drinks, and I would say tequila is probably my favorite liquor, and then behind that would be rum, and then bourbon behind that. But I have this Addictivo tequila right now. It's a, I want to say it's 15 year aged in white oak casks, and it is it's so good. And then I made a fat washed rum out of an Appleton Estate 12 year. And basically what I did is I browned butter. So I melted the butter and then I cooked it until the solids fell to the bottom and browned. And then I put that in the rum bottle and let it sit in the freezer overnight. And that made all the fat rise and harden at the top. And then I poked a hole through the top of the fat. And then I strained the rum out through that, but kept the browns in it and let it sit uncooled in my pantry for about a month. And then I strained out the solids. And it's like butterscotch because it's a aged rum, and Appleton Estate's out of Jamaica, so it has that little funk to it, but with the brown butter in it, it's like this sweet buttery almost butterscotch flavor. It is phenomenal, great for sipping.
That sounds good.
Interesting. So good.
So my question, I have a question, Russell, when are you coming down again,
man? I need to sometime soon.
I mean, don't let me peer pressure you into it, but I'm curious because you know, last time Jose and I talked, we were talking about doing, you know, that South Lando trip again, mm-hmm. Possibly shortening it up because that was, man, the end of that trip was, man, it was a drag.
So I'm thinking maybe at the end of July, my dad's going to be camping. Where is he camping? Somewhere on the coast. And so I wanted to go see him. So coming to Central Texas, I'm not sure, but I think I will be on the coast at the end of July.
Yeah, I'll make the trip, man. I mean, it's only about 3 hours away from me, so we tend to make day trips. Hell, I'll even go down for the weekend if we need to.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm doing. Is I think I'm going to leave here probably, try to leave in the like noon on Friday and get down there and probably come up Sunday. So I'd be there for a couple of days. And once I get out that all squared away, I'll let y'all know. And maybe we could all just all get together and camp out, do some fishing.
Definitely. That'd be a good time. Also, I need to come up back up that way again and actually fish Arkansas. I didn't get to fish Arkansas while I was up there.
Yeah, dude, I could definitely take you out. There's a bunch of good places.
I know Jose and I talked about maybe taking a weekend to get up there, just fish it the hell out and come back down. So
right. We both need to make trips. Y'all make a trip up here. I'll make a trip down there and
for sure.
Go get on some fish for sure.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I told Mark I wanted to go up to Arkansas. He's like, yeah, man, when you go, let me know. So we'll try and figure something out, dude.
Yeah.
For sure. Dude, I want to go get on some freaking salt water, though. I've been itching since Venice. I just want to go back. I mean, I don't necessarily care to go back. Like, I would love to go back to Venice. I just, you know, my pocketbook doesn't want to go back to Venice. But I just want to. And I've never caught a speckled trout on the fly rod. I've never caught a sheep's head. I've never caught a jack. Never caught, like, any of that. So, I mean, I'm fine just going and fishing the jetties or surf fishing and trying not to get eaten by a shark. I mean, I just think it'd be fun.
Maybe we could plan. I mean, yeah, if you got any time this summer, but also just for the future, we could plan like for October when the reds start running. Mm-hmm. Oh, hit the jetties or do a kayak trip or whatever. Dude, that it probably awesome. Won't be like Venice, but we can find some fish.
Yeah, man. I mean, Venice was fun. Don't get me wrong, but I would much rather do a DIY trip than spend that money again. You know, that's kind of a, probably once every 5 years type of trip for me.
I think, I'm trying to think that last time we were down at that one spot that we fish, Jose, remember, were you with us? Yeah. You were with us because even Kyle, it was you, Kyle, Danny, and then my buddy, Danny, the one I bought the Indian River canoe from a couple years back.
No, I wasn't there for that trip.
You weren't? I thought you were there with us. No. Uh-uh. Okay, so right, you know, we're usually where we fish. I don't want to throw out any, you know, stuff out there because I just don't know how people feel about it. But you know how we go across that channel and like get into that big old opening. Yes. We were hanging out there. I was anchored down, and Danny came across. Kyle was hanging out there, and I kept throwing at her like a redfish crack and like slow, long strikes. And boom, I was smashing speckled trout like crazy. But my buddy Danny Gonzalez is like, what the, you know, like, dude, how are you catching those, man? How are you so good at catching them? I'm like, yeah, I'm not even trying. Like, just literally casting out this fly and slow, long strikes. I was just bored because we were there hanging out and talking. And I was like, well, I might as well fish while I'm here. And just one after another, I was pulling out speckled trout. So I don't think you'll have a problem catching speckled trout where we're going, Russell.
Nice.
I think one of the hardest things I've had to deal with going to those spots is just learning to be very quiet and not setting things down too hard on the kayak to spook fish. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times, Jose had it happen. I've had it happen. I think even Danny's had it happen. We're paddling and, you know, you're not really paying attention. You're looking forward, right? Because you're looking to where you're going. So you're paddling out, trying to get to the spot. You look down and there's a horde of redfish. I mean, just sometimes pods under you. And you're like, are you freaking kidding me, man? Like, what the? Like, you know, you get this tunnel vision. It's weird. And I had to learn to be patient and kind of like slow it down a little bit and actually pay attention to what's in front of me. Because, man, I can't tell you how many good sized reds were just in front of my kayak. And as soon as I look down and see them, I'm like, oh, no. And they just spook. And that's it. Never see them again.
Damn.
It's like, man. Yeah, it's heartbreaking, man.
That spot that Mark was talking about, I love it and I hate it at the same time because I like it because it's a challenge, but I hate it because it's also a challenge. Like what he described, man, it is frustrating. Like, because for one, it's really pressure. Like it's a pretty well-known spot. Like we see people there all the time when we go. So the fish know what's up, but it's also pretty clear and in some spots pretty shallow. Mm-hmm. So those fish, they can see you. So like if you stand up too quick or if you like make too quick of a motion to cast, dude, they're gone. Or if you like drop or accidentally set your net down or your rod down too hard and they just hear that thud, they're gone. Like any little thing, they're gone. It's insane how hard it is. But it's also good practice because – I mean, when you do get shots, you got to make them count.
Yeah.
And so your casting has to be on point. Like I think it does make you a better fisherman. I feel like I've become a little bit better of a fisherman since going, just because like Marco said, like, I mean, after you've like busted so many reds or so many fish out, like you really have to like be more methodical about what you're doing and your presentation and everything.
I see.
So it's a lot of fun, but it's also really frustrating because there have been times where like you make it. And also, like I said, because they are finicky, you make a good shot. They don't spook, like everything lines up, but they won't eat. Yep. it's freaking nuts, dude. I've dropped flies like right in front of a fish's face and like they'll just stare at it and then they'll just swim away. It's like, what the hell, man? It's so frustrating, but it's a lot of fun too.
That sounds challenging, but it sounds like a lot of fun. That's one thing I want to do is catch a red from a kayak.
Oh man, I don't think I've had that happen yet.
No, you did.
The last when? I mean, I've caught some small reds, no slot size reds. Oh, the last red I caught it in the Gnu, and that was with Josh. He was pulling me around, and I just happened to look over on the right and seen this red was tucked away waiting for something to come by, and I'm like, oh, that's my shot. And I literally just swung the fly over. I didn't even cast at him. I just swung it over in a loop, landed right in front of him, and he smashed it and took off with it. I was like, oh, this was easy. This was the easiest fish I've ever caught. it was easier than going after a sunfish. It was weird. I felt kind of disappointed because like, I didn't really grind it out for that fish. But hey, man, a fish is a fish, so no complaints.
Right. That's freaking awesome, though.
We'll plan a trip, dude.
Yeah, please, let's do this because we need to do it.
We do for sure. We do for sure. Maybe hit up some breweries or distilleries along the way.
Come on, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Actually, didn't we all went to a brewery last time I was in Austin, didn't we?
Pine House.
Yep.
That place is awesome. It was a good time.
It was, man. Yes, food's amazing too.
Yes, it is. So, well, we're coming up on an hour and a half, fellas. So, yeah,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, time flies when you're having fun. So, I guess we're gonna
definitely
get ready to call.
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, we kind of missed out on the Father's Day talk.
No, Russell. Probably what I'll do is I'll probably just do a pre-roll announcement, kind of like I did on the last episode. I just did a pre-roll for the free fishing weekend. I'll probably just do that on this one. There really wasn't too much to talk about on that anyways. It's just more announcing that it is that day. So I'll probably just do a pre-roll on it. So it's not a big deal at all.
Don't forget, guys, get your dads some fly gear. They might like it.
Right? Fly gear or anything to do with outdoors.
Or some whiskey.
That's it.
Whiskey.
I'm not a father, but honestly, man, if I had a kid and he bought me whiskey, I'd be more than ecstatic. So,
Right. I wonder what my kids are going to get me for Father's Day. My oldest is probably going to be like, Dad, can you give me some money so I can buy you something? But
sorry, man, you'll miss it later. You'll say, damn.
Yeah.
Right. So
one thing, Honey Hole Hates Trash.
Yes. Honey Hole Hates Trash. So, that is one thing that we mentioned briefly, on the previous episode that we are going to be partnering with them. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, our sponsor is going to be for the fourth quarter of the year, maybe starting in October. But just because we're talking about it now doesn't mean that you can't pick up your trash and do your due diligence right now. If y'all head out and y'all are doing anything, hiking, walking your dogs, fishing, hunting, anything like that, if you see some trash, just pick it up, stick it in your pocket, throw it in a trash can when you can. Coming to the, at the end of the year, we are going to be working with them as one of the sponsors, and we're going to be, probably tying up some flies, maybe getting some prints and, having stuff ready for raffle. So
Remote Designs also throwing in some stuff too. And also, so actually, did you listen to Honey Hole's most recent episode, Russell?
Which one?
What was that one? I think it was where they were just kind of, I don't remember. I think it was released this week or last week. I can't remember. But anyways, so I think as of right now, they have a guided carp trip that has been donated as one of the prizes. They have some fly tying kits donated by, I think it was Kevin Hutchinson. I could be wrong. If I am, I apologize. But there's some pretty neat stuff in the works for this thing. And if you're interested, I think anybody can do it. Doesn't matter where you are, if I'm not mistaken. But you can find all the information on their website. And then I could be wrong. If I am, I apologize. But yeah, really, really cool. Definitely worth checking out. There's going to be some really cool prizes. And also, they gave us a little shout out. So appreciate it, fellas. We're looking forward to helping out any way we can. So yeah, Honey Hole Hates Trash.
I have not heard that episode. It was actually released yesterday.
Yes.
And so the title of the episode is Some Good Old Fashioned BS, which sounds like a lot of what our podcast is. But it's their 144th episode. And it was released yesterday, which was the 13th of June. So I haven't listened to it yet. I need to go listen to it.
I heard it on the way into town today. So again, thank you. Thank y'all for the shout out. Like I said, any way we can help, we'll be more than happy to. But yeah, guys, check it out. Check out the Honey Hole Hates Trash, and let's keep our waterways clean and why not get some cool stuff, or have a chance to get some cool stuff while we're at it. So go ahead and check that out. Right.
It doesn't cost anything to pick up, wherever you're at. I'm going to be the first one to say that I'm guilty of it. There's been times I'm floating the river and I'm like, Jesus, look what this person did. And I just go right past it. So I'm trying to be better about that, seeing it and picking it up, because if I don't do it, who will, right?
Exactly.
If we all think like that, I think we can really get a lot of these rivers and water systems cleaned up pretty damn well. I see a few of the other people on Instagram doing it, so we should definitely take up the mantle anytime we're out there. Just do it, man. Just for your own well-being, for the fish, keep that fishery alive as long as you can, because Lord knows it's not getting any easier.
Exactly. And there's a lot of spots that I go to, fishing creeks and whatnot, where people go down there in the summertime and have their little get-togethers. And I have a Remote Designs backpack that I take everywhere when I'm out there fishing and hiking and stuff.
Yes.
And it holds, I have two big fly boxes in there, a couple, small fly boxes. I still have plenty of room. And there's been numerous times that I'm picking up beer cans and chip bags and whatever else and just throwing it in there and hiking it back. And when I get home, I'll just throw it in the trash. There's plenty of space in that bag. So, I find myself doing it a lot.
I have to add this, guys. Like, so I was at the when I was at the Pedernales State Park. I'll be quick about it. I found poop bags for, you know, for the canines on the trail. And at that point, you know, I was telling one of my buddies, I'm like, I don't understand why folks do this. Why don't they just let the dog, you know, do its duty? And if you're going to leave it there, at least leave it there without the bag. And as I'm telling them this, I'm like, there's dung beetles out here. We look down and there's a dung beetle literally pushing a ball of feces, you know? And I'm like, look, that's exactly what that's a prime example of why I'm saying this.
So,
like, if you're going to leave it out there, guys, just leave it out there. Hell, man, I don't understand the whole plastic bag and then dumping it off there. It just doesn't make any sense.
So people will pick up their dog's poop and leave the bag.
Yes.
That is so counterintuitive. Wow. It makes no sense.
I saw three of them on a quarter mile trail. So imagine, dude, if you were to actually walk a full 5 miles around there, how many you're going to find.
That's one wild. Of those things that we need to find out who does that and put them on our segment called Jack Wagon of the Week, because that's just stupid.
We haven't done that in a while. It's ridiculous. This might be a good time to do it.
Right? Yeah. We'll add it in right now at the end of the episode. Our Jack Wagon of the Week is people that will pick up their dog's poop in plastic bags and just leave it there. That doesn't make no sense.
Yeah, none at all.
Wow. Well, there you have it, folks.
So don't be a jackwagon. If you pack it, throw it away.
Right. And if you're not going to pack it, or you don't have a bag, or even if you don't want to pack it with you and you have bags, I mean, eventually that feces will, you know, make its way through the circle of life, like Marco was saying. Dung beetles, I mean, it eventually goes away. Granted, you know, if it's a public place where a lot of people are walking and tramping around, you probably don't want to leave your dog's poop there and have somebody step in it. It's an inconvenience.
Right.
But it's much better to just leave it and let it do its thing and let it decompose than to put it in a plastic bag and leave it there.
I agree.
So, well, that'll work. I guess that'll be it for this episode, guys. And, you know, like we say every episode, we appreciate everybody that's making it to the end. You know, like, share, tell other people about it. We appreciate, we know word of mouth is a big thing when it comes to podcasts. So we really appreciate you guys listening, and we'll talk to y'all next time. And thank you, Marco, for joining us.
Yep.
Thank you all for having me on, gents. It was a pleasure, man. Appreciate it. Good talking to you folks. Y'all have a good night.
You too.
This has been Wildlife Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook at Wildlife Outdoors and on Instagram at wild.life.outdoors. Let's go live life on the wild side.